Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Last year, Professor Donna Strickland won the Nobel Prize for Physics. It was the first time in 55 years a woman won the Physics Prize. One of the reasons it took more than a half century for a woman to be recognized is that men outnumber women in the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields by a whole lot. Only 24% of careers in those fields are held by women. On today's program, we look at why that's occurring and what can be done to change it. Joining us on the program today is Stephanie Slocum. She's the Central Pennsylvania representative with the American Society of Civil Engineers. Judd Pittman is the STEM advisor for the Pennsylvania Department of Education. Beth Teske is assistant head of school for academics and the science department chair at the Lyndon Hall School for Girls in Lititz. And Olivia Bennett is a sophomore engineering student at the York County School of Technology. Welcome to all of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Olivia Bennett, I want to start with you. You're a sophomore. You are in the engineering program at the York County School of Technology. Why did you want to get involved with engineering?
Well, my first thought with choosing the program, I knew I wanted to go to York Tech. And when narrowing down my options to choose the program that I was going to go into, it was pretty clear and evident that I wanted to be an engineer. I had always wanted to be an inventor growing up. I had always wanted to know how things worked, and engineering just went right along with that.
What do you want to invent? Have you invented anything yet? Are you on the road to inventing anything yet? Well, let's make some major news here today, Olivia.
Currently, no, I am not.
Okay.
Focusing on my schoolwork is priority.
So you aspired to be an engineer. I mean, when I say to be an engineer, I mean, that's what you want to be.
Yeah, my inevitable goal is to be a biomedical engineer for animals. I want to make prosthetics and, like, organs and things for animals other than cats and dogs, because really the only available technology out there for disabled animals is for cats and dogs. Everybody else seems to just be looked over, but there's still a necessity for animals in zoos, other pets that people have, and things of that nature.
So you are a sophomore.
Yes.
I'm curious how many young women there are in your class, not just the sophomore class, but at York County Technical School.
In the sophomore class, I am the only female out of 30 kids. As engineering in all 4 years, there's like 8 or 9 in total, and that includes freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior.
Mm. All right, so Stephanie Slocum, here's the big question. I have some statistics here. 24% of those in the STEM field, STEM careers, are women. Women are greatly outnumbered in the STEM fields career-wise. And as I think, Olivia is a good example, in high schools and maybe not as much in colleges, but in colleges and universities too. Why?
I would say the number one reason is actually exposure. So when children go through school, for example, what we found is a lot of female engineers had an exposure to a scientist, to an engineer, fairly early in their life, that they knew that was a career option for them. In engineering, percentage-wise, the numbers are actually worse. Mm-hmm. So engineering, depending on which engineering field, 10 to 15%. So my field of civil architectural engineering is actually closer to the 15%. I was fortunate. My architectural engineering program at Penn State, we had 40% women. So for me, and I'm the daughter of two scientists, so I had that exposure. But then when you get out into the workforce, you know, having mentors and role models and people you can look up to in leadership positions that you can emulate that look like you is such a critical component of success. And we are losing engineers even when they get out into the workforce. So 40% of women graduate.
You mean women. Engineers when
yes.
they get out into the workforce?
Yeah. So 40% of engineering majors that are women that graduate either drop out or they never enter the workforce. one in four drop out after the age of 30. So just to bring that home, that means they went through all that education, they worked for 10 years, and then they decided that field wasn't for them. That's not because of lack of interest. It's not because they aren't good at what they do. In that case, it's a work culture issue because men leave too. One in 10 men leave too. And they cite the same reasons. It's just that the lack of mentors and role models in the field, and that's one, you know, you mentioned I'm one of the volunteers with the American Society of Engineers, like focusing on mentorship and the fact that that organization is one of the oldest ones in the United States, and the last three presidents have all been women. Like, there, it's getting better. There are women role models out there, but we need more because we need young women to look and see that, yes, I can aspire to the highest positions in engineering organizations, and I have, you know, a path I can walk that I can see, and people around me that are going to support me throughout my career.
Mm-hmm. Olivia, I'm curious. When Stephanie said that role models or knowing someone involved in the field, have you had exposure to anyone like that, know someone like that, or is this just something that on your own you got this interest?
I would say on my own I got this interest. I haven't really had any strong female or even male STEM-like people to look up to. It's always just been something that's come naturally to me, I guess. I had a neighbor who I grew up with who was very interested in it too, and she's looking into being an engineer as well. And so her and I kind of grew up together in that sort of let's be scientists kind of aspect.
Well, Stephanie, let me get back to what you had said about mentors and role models. I have to admit that one of the reasons that I included Donna Strickland, who won the Nobel Prize for Physics, in my introduction is because, you know, she's being pointed to as someone who could be a role model for a lot of young women and girls. That, you know, here's someone, it took 55 years, though, but here is a woman who won the Nobel Prize. What she had done is worked, she groundbreaking inventions in lasers that are used in cancer research and also in eye care. So someone like that, is that the kind of role model you need, or you need, do young women need someone closer to them?
Yes, is the answer to that question.
Okay.
Young women need role models at all levels, but I also do think it starts in the educational system, and with your parents saying, you know, yes, math and science is hard. Anything worth doing is hard. There are some engineers that will say, man, English is ridiculously hard. but telling them that, you know, if this is your interest, you can do it throughout the educational system, and then having that support out in the workforce for anything that may come up, to have a sounding board, to have someone, you know, telling them you can do it. And I'm not talking about like platitudes if you can do it either. It's, you know, someone you can go to when you have a tough question, someone you can, you know, that will encourage you to stick with it.
Right. We have an email here from a listener. It says, women and girls are interested in STEM subjects. However, a path to success in STEM careers is not clear for women because it is a male-dominated field. Even with changes in society, women and girls are raised to ask permission first. And when someone disagrees with them, they are taught to accept the answer. I think it's related to conversations women and girls have related to other consent-type issues. And because of this, women and girls' ideas are not heard. And when they are not heard, they are discouraged and drop out. Additionally, like in any other career, if a woman wants to have children, it conflicts with the idea of ongoing projects. I don't believe there are valid solutions to child rearing and working. What do you think about that, Stephanie?
I think there are some very valid points in there. So I worked as a structural engineer for 15 years before starting my own company about 6 or 7 months ago after I wrote a book to help mentor and guide young engineers called She Engineers. One of the things I talk about is the fact, you know, is this permission based? You know, we wait for someone to call on us before we talk. And I'll be interested to hear from Beth, because we were actually talking about this before the show, how that pairs off in
just,
the education.
And just so that the audience knows that I told you, jump right in. Don't wait for me to call on you.
Yeah.
So Beth, Beth Teske is the Assistant Head of School for Academics and Science Department Chair at Lindenhall Prep School for Girls. I say prep, I short it's preparatory. So, you know, getting to one of the things that I have read is that one of the keys to success in getting more girls and young women interested in the STEM topics and following through and staying with it mm-hmm. is getting to them between the ages of 11 and 15. Would you yes. agree with that?
Absolutely.
Why?
Having exposure to success in a small way leads girls to have confidence as they step into STEM subjects, into any subject later in their life. And so if we can take a girl when she is in middle school and show her a pathway to success, then she's going to be confident enough to approach it later on in life and then continue on like Olivia and say, hey, I had this friend and we worked together and we have this plan for like world domination in science, right?
Sounds like a movie, you know.
It does sound like a movie. Finding those connections, especially for girls, especially at that age, right? Finding that social connection coupled with the success in science leads them to have that greater confidence that's going to push them to continue to succeed and continue to have that confidence and continue to step forward
but
later
Linden
on in
Hall,
lives.
Linden Hall is mm-hmm. all girls, correct?
It is all girls.
So I would see where it would be yeah. easier for girls being amongst themselves mm-hmm. to develop, okay, you have that interest, develop that confidence, yeah. but what happens once they leave the, you know, the Linden Hall
right.
and are in college and university with men as well, and then go on to those careers?
So that's one of the questions that we keep asking our alumni. You know, we say to them, what was the influence of being in a single gender environment later on in life? And each January, we invite back recent alumni to come and sit and talk with our current students. And I found it really interesting this year, as is true in other years as well, of the girls who came back to talk to our girls, 75% of them were pursuing STEM studies in college. And having those role models and those mentors coming back and talking to our girls continues to encourage them to continue with their current studies and their interests. And I loved seeing that. And I'm sorry, I'm losing my track.
I was just asking about once they do go out there and, right. you know, they're dealing with men on a daily basis.
So we say to them, one of the concerns about, you know, do I send my daughter to an all-girls school? Is often, it's not the real world. Well, you know what? You're right. It's not the real world. It's not. But neither is a co-educational environment for education either. School is school, and life is life, and work is work, and it's hard. But all of those girls who came back to talk with our current students talk about the confidence and the comfort that they have. They have been taught in high school that their voices are important, their voices matter, and that their voices will be heard. And so when they go to college and they have a question or they need to talk to a professor or they want to raise their hand in class, they're more likely to do so. They are comfortable interacting with others in their programs and with their professors in ways that their classmates who were girls in co-ed environments aren't as likely to do.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that we did want to have you on the program today is because Linden Hall has a reputation of alumni that and you know curriculum that the girls, the students, are involved in STEM subjects mm-hmm. and do go on to these type of careers. We're going to talk about the state's role in STEM education coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about women in the STEM fields today, science, technology, engineering, and technology. I know that we would have some audience members out there say that we should include the A in there as well. STEAM is becoming a bigger subject, and that involves the arts and how they're related to technology as well. Our guest on today's program, Olivia Bennett, who is a sophomore in the engineering program at York County School of Technology, Beth Teske, assistant head of school for academics Mathematics and the Science Department Chair at Linden Hall School for Girls in Lititz. Judd Pittman is the STEM Advisor for the State Department of Education. And Stephanie Slocum is a Central Pennsylvania representative with the American Society of Civil Engineers. She's an engineer herself and author of a book about women in STEM. 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call if you have a question or a comment. You can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalk, WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Quick story before we move on to talking about what the state is doing when it comes to STEM education and women in STEM in particular. Family friend that I've known this woman since she was born, knew her parents before she was born, very good friends, graduated from Georgia Tech with honors. As an engineering student, got a job after a couple years after graduation in Los Angeles. Absolutely hated it. She was actually, you know, Stephanie, same field as you, you know, designing bridges, roads, you know, infrastructure, but absolutely hated it. She was the only woman. She said that the men were, you know, sexist jokes, things like that. Didn't take her very seriously when she would have suggestions. Left after a couple of years. Last I heard, she had gotten a job in with a firm in Seattle where I think she's happier, and there are a few women on staff with her.
Right.
I don't know. Is that typical?
I'm going to go back to what I mentioned earlier about the girls making social connections at a relatively early age. And I think that those social connections that we make early on with other women who are interested in the same kind of things that we are interested in carry us through. There's a recent study that's been published by the Proceedings of National Academy of Sciences that focuses more on women in leadership positions in business, but I think that the same thing is true in the sciences, where when you are a woman looking for success in these fields, having a close cadre of friends who are women who are in similar positions to you, you know, whether they are fellow scientists or other business women, right? Other women who are approaching leadership in the same way that you are. Having those close connections, that knowledge of that safety net being there helps, right? You're more likely to feel successful. You're more likely to be able to move forward with that support. Women just, I think that we're finding more and more, form different networking pathways than men do. And having that tight inner circle of people for women is essential. You know, whether it starts with the friendships and the mentors that we experience in schools and then goes on later in our professional career.
Judd Pittman is the STEM advisor for the State Department of Education. And Judd, I'm not ignoring you because you're the only man on our panel or anything like that. A lot of people in our studio today. How important is STEM education, this is the broad question, STEM education for the State Department of Education, and then the second part of that question, how important is it that we have more women involved?
Well, can I circle back to something
you can absolutely
with? When you had given the intentional update on the females in science with your opening, those small little pieces are essential that we intentionally do that in classrooms. So, you know, girls' interest in STEM or engineering begins to waver in elementary from around survey-wise, 66% of girls are interested in STEM in elementary. That drops down to about 33% in middle school. And if we look at some research by the Journal of Child Development, as early as second grade, these gender stereotypes around math or science or technology or engineering begin to take root. And it's small little things that these begin to take root. It may be your teacher walking around and saying, girls aren't good in math, or another student saying...
Why would a teacher say that?
Well, you know, it might be something that you have heard in your own past. So it's really about a culture shift and providing intentional examples of successful females, successful students, or successful engineers, or STEM folks of color, all of those things you need to make sure you do. When I was in the classroom, one of the activities we would start the year off with is just a simple activity, and we were talking about this a little bit in the green room, like just perception around STEM. And it would be draw what a scientist looks like. And regardless of gender, most folks will draw a scientist that looks something like Albert Einstein, that is a white male. So providing those intentional examples in pictures in a PowerPoint, the way that you lead into a lesson, are really essential for beginning to change that culture around who and what is an engineer, a mathematician, a computer scientist. And then, you know...
Can I interrupt just
one
second?
Sure, sure, without a doubt.
Well, you know, so what you're pointing out is that society has a stereotype and that it comes down to younger women, to girls. What about parents? I mean, we've heard of successful women and men who have said, whose parents have said, you can do anything you want to, you know, just work hard, the American dream. Mm-hmm. But are there parents who discourage their daughters from getting involved in this because they're saying, you know, there are not a lot of jobs out there, there are not a lot of women out there, this is something that, why don't you do this, that they, whether they're consciously or unconsciously, moving them towards something that they would consider more appropriate for women.
And a lot of that is unconscious. We talk a lot about the difference between implicit and explicit bias, and some of those things flesh out in just general conversation. So it is a journey that we need to be extremely intentional about as educators, as professionals, to get folks in front of our youngsters that look, sound, and feel like them. And whether that's education for parents to make sure that they see these opportunities and that they can see young professionals in their spaces, but it has to be intentional. It can't be haphazard. So, you know, if we circle back to the question that you had started with around what are the goals of the Pennsylvania Department of Education, or for that matter, the goals of the governor, we've been really focused on putting in the forefront data around what are the opportunities for young girls or historically underserved students in these spaces. So we'll share, for example, our course-taking pattern data in computer science. And you can look at the last 3 years, and you will see that, you know, 60% of the folks that take computer science at the high school level are males. And if you break that down even more by socioeconomic status and females, it breaks down even a smaller slice of girls get the opportunity to do that. So one of the things that we've done in the last year is through the PA Smart Initiative, we've taken roughly about a $20 million investment, and we've intentionally targeted about $8 million of those dollars to schools that aren't offering computer science or have no offerings to computer science, with the goal that they will then intentionally target historically underserved students. And in that language is that we are targeting females and giving them the opportunities to engage in these spaces.
Something that you mentioned that I caught, Judd, is that you said mostly white male. And I want to bring up another aspect of this. Not only are females underrepresented in the STEM fields, but Black and Latina women especially. And I mean, you're all nodding your heads, but I mean, this is a big problem because,
yes.
I mean,
yes.
You're very much underrepresented. I'm curious, at Lyndon Hall, are there African American girls, Latino girls?
Absolutely.
Hold on just one second. I'll get your microphone here.
Yeah, absolutely there are. And they are interested in STEM fields.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about, you know, there are 30% of girls engaged in computer science classes, at Lyndon Hall, 100% of the girls who are in computer science classes are girls, right? 100% of our students who are engaged in STEM are girls. And when you're talking about pulling in mentors and pulling in exemplars from the world into our classroom spaces, it's also important. I see it all the time with the girls, having a 6th, 7th, 8th grade girl who has a high school age girl to look up to, who can say, you know, there's that girl who went and she did science research over the summer because I heard her talk at school about her fungi wars. We had a girl who went and...
Fungi wars.
So we had a student who graduated a couple of years ago, did a research project over the summer where she took two different forms of fungi and set them up against each other in a Petri dish. But she talked about it in front of the whole entire school, and having a young woman of color standing in front of the entire student body talking about her research over the summer was just phenomenal and impactful.
Well, and I want to get to some phone calls here in just a moment. What is it about middle school? You know, as Judd said, that you know, with the statistics that that young women seem to lose interest in those middle school years. What is it about middle school?
So we've been asking that question for years.
I try to ask the question that
right?
we
goes all the way back to Mary Piper and reviving Ophelia. Right?
yeah,
it
yeah.
was ages ago now, and we're still working with girls in middle school. There are fundamental things that happen, and the changes that happen in the brain as girls mature, as students mature, and we're still trying to understand how we can help girls, especially retain those voices and that confidence, and in the way that. That everybody wants them to.
So, you know, one of the opportunities that we need to leverage is outside of the classroom. So mm-hmm. making sure that at our public libraries or our after-school spaces, our Boys and Girls Clubs, yeah. that we're elevating STEM opportunities there, because often they're low-risk spaces for
right.
folks that haven't had an opportunity to engage in this, and they can get that little bit of confidence.
Right.
They can begin to grow in that space. And then when we get back into the classroom, you're more likely to engage in that. But as an educator, we, again, need to be intentional about, you know, are we always calling on that same person just out of habit, or are we intentionally giving every student in our classroom voice or mm-hmm. opportunities to engage? So that after school space to build opportunity, and then parlaying that into experiences in the classroom. And there are some great, you know, there are some great networks out there, and it's our mm-hmm. job at the Department of Ed to make sure that we're elevating those networks. So Tech Girls is a good organization yeah. that's rooted in Philly, that's focused on middle school girls, that's providing them STEM and computer science opportunities, but making sure that people know that that's out there. Or Techno La Chicas is one that's focused just on Latino girls. We have a really strong partnership with the national organization known as Girls Who Code, and making sure that those after clubs are mm-hmm. elevated and that there's opportunities out there. It's really about, you know, not just raising awareness, but making sure that we're given the pathways to get young ladies right. into those spaces.
And then as you do that, you pull in your older girls mm-hmm. to then mentor those mm-hmm. younger girls. We've got girls who are volunteering with a local museum who's running a Girls Code Club, and our girls go and volunteer on the weekends. They're mentoring those girls through in computer science and coding.
One of the things that you said that was really interesting about is the middle school space. We just recently yeah. had a statewide computer science competition. And when we looked at the data around who engaged, the educators, which was really fascinating, 90% of the educators were females mm-hmm. that were engaging their students in that. And we weren't really sure what that would flesh out. And there was roughly about 6,400 students. But when we started to pare that down, what the student data looked like, it wasn't quite as there wasn't that gender parity across who was engaging. And then we recently had a competition where it was a joint venture between the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Education, and DCNR. And we put out a challenge to Delaware, Bucks, Montgomery, and Chester counties to design a solution around trying to find a solution for the lanternfly. And so one of our lead teams, and that was an all-girls team, and they designed this amazing solution that had an app, it had a game, it allowed folks to socially connect and talk about where they're finding the lanternfly. And one of the exciting parts about it, the girls that engaged in that space, they had never coded before. They had never been part of a computer science experience. But this was a platform for them to get there. And one of the things that Olivia said that we really seem to find is that if there is an opportunity for social change and to really make a difference, girls are the leaders in that space without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're ready to dive right in and go make
Let's take some phone calls. Bob is in Harrisburg. Bob, you're on the air. Whoops, I guess Bob is no longer there. Let's go with Kathy in Columbia. Kathy, you're there. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm a mom here in Columbia, and I have a question about the school science fair. I remember way back, it always seemed like the boys had the more advanced projects, and I believe it began at home with fathers at the time who were more likely to have an engineering or science-based career and were there at home helping the boys. Is there something schools can do to help mentor girls or make science fair more of a joint project rather than such an individual, isolated task for parents and kids? I think science fair should switch to be more of a group, not, you know, so isolating where girls don't get the support at home that maybe some boys do.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. What about that, Stephanie?
Okay, so I did science fairs when I was a kid.
You know, I think I could have predicted that.
and did I mention my parents are both scientists?
Yes, so, you did mention
yeah.
that.
So I'll also say I didn't mention this earlier. So I have three daughters as well. So the oldest is 10, I have a 7, and I have a 4. And they're just starting to get into the science fair thing. So I really like the caller's point. I think, you know, I can't really comment on specifically what the school system can do, but I also think we can't take away the discussion of girls in STEM from the broader issues of girls in society. Mm-hmm. You know, so when we watch shows like, you know, The Big Bang Theory, and we say that's what engineering is, you know, people who are, you know, isolated working on their computers, and we contrast that, for example, like a movie the American Society of Civil Engineers put out called Dream Big, which shows engineers that don't look like any kind of stereotypical engineer you've ever seen, and focus on the impact engineers have on the world.
Mm-hmm. So that's, Sheldon is not...
No, Sheldon is not in Dream Big.
Okay, But I mean, is he the stereotype that many people have?
I think he is. Mm-hmm. I think he is. And so, you know, back to, you know, moms out there, help your daughters and your sons with the science fair projects. We can learn a whole lot of stuff on the internet. Even, you know, even if you're an engineer, that doesn't mean my daughter's science fair project. I know specifically the area she wants to do research in. And I would also, you know, the one comment said about the group projects. I would add a caution about the emphasis on group projects. Yes, engineering STEM fields are of today very collaborative, very mm-hmm. creative, very much team-based. But I also think sometimes in middle school especially that some girls will prefer to work on their own. And the other thing we know is that teams in some cases fall prey to these, you know, unconscious gender biases that we have, in that sometimes when girls are on mixed gender teams, the boys will take over the technical stuff and they'll tell the girls to write the reports or do the presentations.
I'm curious, Livia, has that happened to you?
Yes, I can confidently say that has happened to me, especially back in middle school before I went to tech. My home school is Dallastown, and there, I cannot speak for other schools, but I know there I did experience a lot of like, oh, you're a girl, so you should do the art portion of the project. Mm-hmm. And although it was fun, I still had interest in doing the research and writing the reports and like doing the math portions of everything. And it bothered me, but I learned very quickly to hold my own.
No, okay, when you say hold your own, what do you mean hold your own? I mean, did you speak up? Or?
Yeah. I learned very quickly to speak up, and especially being the only female in my year of engineering students at York Tech, I did earn a lot of sexist comments the first 2 months that I was in there for freshman year. And like I said, I held my own, and they very quickly went away after these boys realized that I'm not going anywhere.
When you say you held your own, how?
Basically telling them to just cut it out kind of thing, that I am an equal to them. My ideas matter just as much as theirs do. Basically trying to tell them the reality of things.
Mm. We're going to have some more phone calls, and there's a lot to talk about coming up on the program. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about women in the STEM fields today. Our guest, Stephanie Slocum with the American Society of Civil Engineers. She's the Central PA representative and author of a book about women in STEM. Judd Pittman, STEM advisor for the State Department of Education. Beth Teske, assistant head of school for academics and the science department chair at Lyndon Hall School for Girls in Lititz. And Olivia Bennett, a sophomore in the engineering program at the York County School of Technology. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are @smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Julie. Is it Reversburg or Reversburg, Julie?
Reversburg.
Okay.
Reversburg.
So what's on your mind?
So I am a fairly recent retiree from IBM and have spent most of my career, 30-some years, in the STEM field, working in computer science and artificial intelligence. And I think there is a significant role for corporate America. Corporate America, you know, with our programs for kids and with internships, tends to focus on the boys because so many people in this field are men. And we need a rethinking there of programs for kids within corporate America to see what these jobs are like. And, you know, honestly, we need a rethinking of how these jobs are because there are so many men, and it is such a boys' network, especially if you have any kind of job where you travel, like in providing service and things like that. It just makes it very difficult for women, and we need to address that.
Thank you very much for your call. Stephanie Slocum, what about that?
Well, first, I want to commend that caller for sticking with it for that, you know, time frame. That's really impressive, and she's in a very small elite group for doing that. The number one reason people leave engineering, men or women, is because of work culture. So I do think that companies and corporations can really help with this, you know, specific to the internship question. If a female intern comes in, if a man or woman of color who's an intern comes in, having someone there to help them that looks like them could go a long way towards helping them stay in the field. Because what we don't want here, and I think this is, you know, the point we're all getting at today, is for people who have aptitudes, who have interests, who could be very, very good, find the next, you know, life-saving drug, fly us to space. Those people, we don't want to lose them from STEM because they feel like they are not welcome.
I have a few emails here. A listener says, the comment that was made regarding images and exposure to women in STEM fields is spot on. When we become accustomed to seeing and interacting with women in these fields, it becomes normal. For example, my boys' pediatricians in two different towns we lived in were both African-American women, just by happenstance. That became normal to our kids, that doctors are women, and their experience, women of color. Let's go to another email. Ask Mr. Pittman if he feels that having new updated science standards would help with STEM education for all PA students. The current science standards from the Department of Education are from the 90s are incredibly outdated.
So I'm going to circle back to one thing before we touch on the standards piece.
Okay.
The first caller had mentioned about her resilience at IBM. And when we look at the growth of the Pennsylvania economy, high-priority STEM jobs are going to be 26% of that economy, or grow at 26% through 2026. So if we're going to solve the grand challenges in Pennsylvania or across the world, we're going to need to make sure that we have diverse thought, and that is going to have to include everybody to get into that space. And with regards to internships and apprenticeships, we're going to have to do an intentional job of connecting folks with those opportunities. And if it is an apprenticeship or an internship, that we get females into those spaces and leverage networks like Million Women Mentors or STEM Up to pair them with folks that do look and sound and feel like them, so that they feel that culture of welcomeness, and that they don't have that negative experience. It needs to be a positive experience so they move forward. And, you know, with regards to the standards, I mean, it's one of those things where we're going to really need to make sure that we have strong stakeholder engagement and hear from the field to see where we go next with regards to taking a look at those standards.
Okay, but if they haven't been updated since the 1990s, and I actually have had someone involved in the STEM field as a teacher on the program who talked about that, I mean, what other curriculum do we have in Pennsylvania that has not been updated in 20 years? Especially one that changes, you could probably make the case, on a daily basis.
Well, one of the things that we're trying to do is, within our sphere of influence, is control the communication and elevate exemplar. So if there are those schools or those spaces that are really doing really great work in STEM, regardless of the standards that they're using, we want to make sure that we highlight them and we put them on the front page of how to engage kids. And you know, with regards to the current state of standards, there's a lot of standards that need to be addressed and need to be updated or need to be taken a look at it. But one of our key priorities and one of our key goals is to make sure that things bubble up from the bottom up, so that it's got to be a grassroots engagement. So it's got to come through stakeholders, and much like we did with the computer science standards. So recently, the State Board of Education in January 2018 endorsed the computer science standard, the computer science teacher standard. That took root through a process of roughly about 50 stakeholder sessions where we heard from the field. We got a large group of folks together from business and industry, higher ed, K-12 to dive into that. And then we made a recommendation to move something forward. It so it's like got to be grassroots.
It has to happen, though, because 70% of the future careers and jobs in this state and across the country will have some take some STEM skills. This is too important to let go. So I don't want to sound like I'm lecturing, Judd.
Right. And nothing precludes a teacher from engaging and using other resources. So a lot of the resources that are out there right now, especially the large publishing companies, they're aligned to a certain set of standards. They're aligned to the next generation standards. So it's not precluding folks from using the best materials or the best resources.
Mm-hmm. Let's take some phone calls, and I want to see if here. Is it Donya?
It's Dana.
Dana, I'm sorry. I got it. There was an extra I in your name when I got your note. Dana from Mechanicsburg.
Yes. I would like for you to discuss the demand issue, specifically related to the state government and other large IT employers, and the fact that they specifically have a bias towards H-1B visa holders when hiring, and how can we increase the representation of any group in IT fields when they don't even want to hire Americans?
All right, thank you very much for your call. The point he makes, and I don't know whether we can say by fact that there's a bias. But the fact is that there is a lot of foreign-born representation in this field. Not even getting into the immigration issue, because that's a whole other thing. But does that preclude some American young women from getting into this field? Or is it just a question of competition that, okay, this guy is going to get the job because he has better credentials?
Go ahead. One of the things that we've been trying to do is elevate computer science and IT as a core priority in the Commonwealth. So with the work that we're doing around the standards and the PA Smart Initiative and the focus on connecting workforce and K-12 and post-secondary to give more folks the opportunity and to give more folks the experience to get into that space. So that $20 million investment through the PA Smart Initiative is to make sure that those 17, 18,000 unfilled computer science jobs in the Commonwealth, that our kids can drive towards those opportunities. But it's going to take, an all hands on deck and an accelerated approach to get there. Right now, we don't have a cadre of computer science teachers in the Commonwealth to give a lot of our kids that experience. So building out that framework so that we have a certification program for educators, so that we have more teachers that feel comfortable doing that. And that's why we were so intentional over the last 2 years to focus on K-4. So we made sure to train and provide professional learning for elementary educators in this space so that they feel comfortable giving those opportunities.
Let's take another phone call from Emily in Lancaster. Emily, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
I'm a recently retired fourth grade teacher. I just retired in December, so I am remembering very well what it's like in the classroom.
Well, congratulations.
Yes, thank you. But I have a few things that I'd like to point out, having just recently left the classroom, that as a teacher, I loved teaching science. However, many teachers are not trained for teaching specific subjects in science. As far as materials go, yes, there are many wonderful materials out there, but budgets, school budgets are not allowing us to obtain those materials, and teachers cannot always be expected to pay for things with their own money. The other thing is that we don't have specific STEM teachers in a lot of schools, and that, again, is because of budgets. And then the last thing that I'd like to mention is that the high-stakes testing that takes place in fourth grade in science really puts a lot of pressure on classroom teachers when we are also getting pressure from high-stakes testing in math and in language arts as well.
Emily, I was wondering why it took so long before we got the standardized test. Hey, thank you very much for your call and hearing from someone who has just recently been in the classroom. Stephanie Slocum, I saw you jumped in your chair when she talked about standardized tests.
I feel like I'm not qualified to comment on this. I just, every time my daughters take a standardized test, they like don't sleep for the whole week of PSSAs. I know we only have 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
I just, my quick comment on that, you know, other than I didn't have to take them when I was growing up, is that, you know, I think one thing we have to keep in mind with STEM fields is that STEM teaches you a particular way to think logically about solving a problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a very hard thing to test.
We have a caller who said the same thing, is that you know, when you are focusing on a lot of these different topics, it is not teaching critical thinking. That's right. Always been one of the criticisms of standardized testing. Let's take a call from Amanda in Clayville. Amanda, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, yeah. So I'm a former STEM employee. I'm a chemical engineer by degree. And I've found that one of the biggest problems of keeping women in STEM fields is the lack of support once they become mothers. Mm-hmm. You know, we have no maternity leave in this country, you know, required to give to people. And STEM careers are often very, very demanding. And it comes to the point where a lot of women have to decide, is this enough support for my family, or am I going to have to change my job? And I think that we lose a lot of intelligent women who could be still working at least part-time or something in a STEM field because they can't do both their family care and their career.
Thank you very much for your call. And we've had several callers comment on that aspect of it as well. Something I'll just throw out there, there are some other countries have more lenient, I don't know whether that's the right word or not, but more expanded paternity leave, that fathers can stay home right after a child has been born, and the family, the girls in the family, can see the mother go back to work. It's had some mixed results. But Stephanie, I'm going to come back to you. I mean, you have three children. Mm-hmm. What she talks about, I mean, it's something that women deal with in all fields, but maybe this one in particular, because as she said, there's a lot that goes into it.
There is, and even in this country, in firms that offer paternity leave, we see lots of men not taking it because of the stigma associated with taking it.
They don't want to stay home and be house dads.
No. Well, no. The stigma associated at work,
oh,
if they take it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That for some reason, you know, their contribution in the home just isn't as valuable because they didn't give birth. Once again, that dives into a whole bunch of, you know, society issues. But I could say, so I have a whole chapter in my book dedicated to this. The biggest thing is finding a work environment, if you are a female in engineering, that supports you having children. I had all three kids at the same employer, and it was a small firm. It was not an IBM size. The owner of the firm was a woman. And I had a really good experience there. So it's finding that supportive work culture where you can thrive as an engineer.
Is that something that a woman should ask going in? I mean, in an interview, you don't want to say, you know,
yeah,
I'm planning on having a family. What are your policies? I mean, how do you do that? And I only have about 30 seconds left.
You can ask the question how they support, you know, work-life balance, for example, because it's
okay,
not just maternity leave.
Right, there are other things,
like,
yeah.
Male and female engineers want to have a life outside of work. They don't want to be work martyrs.
Yeah.
Maternity leave is just one of a host of things you could ask a question about.
Mm. So if we've got the time, I really think that this nails down the point. We've done a lot of conversation in this hour about curriculum and about classes and about encouraging students and mentoring. It's not a question about curriculum. It's a question about culture.
And I think that's where we're going to have to leave. I want to thank you. A great conversation today. Thank all of you for being with us on today's program. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking about emissions, efforts by the state to reduce emissions in Pennsylvania, another environmental topic that will come along as well. We will have the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection joining us on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in.